Please be seated. The matter on the court's calendar this morning is State of Minnesota versus Philip Michael Johnson. Counsel, when you're ready, please tell us your names when you approach the podium. Counsel for appellant may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Jenna Yauk Erickson. I am an assistant state public defender. I'm here this morning representing the appellant, Mr. Philip Johnson. Mr. Johnson has raised two issues for this court's consideration, and they are significantly intertwined. In this trial, the state had to prove that Mr. Johnson made statements that were assaultive towards MN. The only time the jury heard the content of those alleged statements were in the prosecutor's questions, which are not evidence. Then in closing argument, the prosecutor told the jury 9 separate times that his statements were evidence, 2 times going as far as to tell the jury that even though it had been instructed that statements of the attorneys are not evidence, that his statements were an exception to that rule. That was plainly erroneous misconduct and also warrants reversal in this case. These issues both deal with the only evidence of guilt.
What's the first, how would you characterize, leaving aside the prosecutorial misconduct, what's the first issue?
Sufficiency of the evidence. There was no evidence of these threats.
Do you agree, do you disagree that the evidence came in as past recollection recorded?
I do, Your Honor, because it was never read into the record. What the prosecutor did was ask impeachment questions. He was very clear during the bench conference that that was what he was going to do. In fact, when he asked for the bench conference on the record in front of the jury, he said, Your Honor, I would like to impeach this witness. They then had a bench conference, and many times, 5, 6 times during that bench conference, he said on pages 103, 105, 107, and 113 that what he planned to do was impeach this witness.
I know he said the word impeach. What do you think, how do you think the district court admitted that evidence? Did the district court admit it as past recollection recorded subject to the laying of foundation? Didn't that happen in the discussion?
That's what the district court ruled, okay. But I'm not challenging the district court's ruling. I'm challenging the sufficiency of the evidence. The prosecutor didn't do that.
Stone. So you're saying even though the district court admitted the evidence as past recollection recorded, the prosecutor didn't offer it as such, and in fact just used it, because the prosecutor didn't in fact use the word impeachment, although I don't know what it would be impeaching, he didn't challenge credibility.
Well, I think he was challenging the credibility of his own witness because he felt she was recanting or something of that nature. Nonetheless, he has to get the evidence into the record. He didn't.
Stone. And he just said to her after the foundation is laid, she said to the witness, please, rather than saying, does it say this? Witness answered yes. He could have just said, consistent with the district court's ruling, please read the statement.
Perhaps, Your Honor, or could have read it himself, or in the essence of a stipulation, had the court read it. But Stone says when evidence comes in under 8035, you play the recording. That's what Stone allows an attorney to do. That's not what was done here.
What's the difference? What's the difference?
There's no evidence in the record.
But if the witness confirms and ratifies the content of the information contained in the question under sworn testimony, if she agrees that the content in the question is correct, what's the difference here?
I'm glad you brought that up, Your Honor. She did not make adoptive admissions, and it's very clear to be careful about our factual record here. So MN says very consistently, I do not remember my statement. She is offered to be refreshed with her written statement twice and says, it does not refresh my recollection. I do not remember. Then when the prosecutor asks her these two impeachment questions, I have this statement you gave, didn't you say something, something, is that what it says? She says, that's what it says. She doesn't say that's what I said.
Right, because it's past recollection recorded.
Well, it would have been.
Right, and you're not challenging that the district court let it in, or you're not challenging to the foundation whether it had come in that way. You're just saying the method of it was wrong, that it was not read. And I think the question is, what's the difference of asking the witness to read it, the transcript, and asking the witness not to adopt that it, she recalls it, but to in fact say, yes, adopt that that's in fact what it says.
I have two responses, Your Honor. This is hearsay evidence. We have a whole set of rules of evidence to deal with hearsay evidence, because we, as the legislature and the people who write the rules of evidence, have decided it's inherently unreliable. So we only let in certain kinds of hearsay evidence, and we have rules about it. We have rules for a reason. This rule says if there's a certain piece of evidence that should come in, it should be read into the record.
What does it mean to read it into the record? I mean, is there any case law that says that this type of question and answer format does not equate to reading it into the record for purposes of Rule 803,
I would say the opposite is true, Your Honor. There's no authority that says this was correct. What Stone says is...
But is there any case that directly addresses this type of situation?
No, I don't believe so.
Did you say you're talking about Stone?
Yes.
Is that in your, what
is
in your brief?
I do have a citation for you. It's...
is it in your brief?
It is.
Okay, I just don't see it in the table before you.
It's certainly in respondent's brief, and I responded to it in my reply. Not be in my principal brief.
Okay.
That was the prosecutor at trial and respondent on appeals' main case of authority that says this was correct. What Stone says is play the recording. That's not, because that's what the rule says. Read it into the record. Play the recording. What was done here is impeachment. Impeachment evidence cannot be used as substantive evidence. I'd like to give you an example.
How is this impeachment evidence?
This is how you impeach a witness. You take a prior statement and say, didn't you give a statement on a different day?
What is it actually impeaching? I mean, I know the word impeach was used, but...
The word impeach was used multiple times. The prosecutor's...
I recognize that.
Very clear that's what he wants to do.
I'm just not making the connection between exactly what was being impeached.
Well, I don't know. The prosecutor wanted to impeach her for some reason, perhaps because he felt she was being untruthful. I'm not sure. He at one point called her a hostile witness, and at one point said she wasn't answering his question. Those are both quotes from the record. So again, it wasn't just one fleeting slip of the tongue. This is five or six times the prosecutor says, what I'd like to do is ask her, isn't it true, sort of questions and impeach her. He's also very clear, I don't want to play the exhibit. Now, that was wrong. This is an odd case where a prosecutor simply made an error of law. If he wanted, and perhaps it was a mistake, an honest, pure mistake, he meant to play it and he didn't. Nonetheless, we don't have this evidence in the record. Here's a helpful counterexample. This court somewhat recently addressed a criminal case where sufficiency of the evidence was raised. The only element challenged was jurisdiction. The one in criminal trials that is typically very easy to prove. Where did this take place and on what day? The prosecutor in that case simply forgot to have an officer testify this happened in Hennepin County. Nonetheless, this court reversed because it's an element, and an element the state has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. So it didn't matter that everyone in the courtroom knew it happened in Hennepin County. It's an element, as this is an element. Prosecutors deal with recalcitrant or forgetful witnesses all the time. They have many tools in their toolbox to get this evidence into the record, and they typically know how.
Well, let me ask you this, and I think it relates to the question that Judge Cochran was asking. If a witness testifies to X, Y, and Z, and the prosecutor intends to impeach because the witness said something different on a prior occasion about X, Y, and Z, that's impeachment.
Mm-hmm.
If a witness simply says, I don't remember, I don't remember, I don't remember, what is there to impeach?
The lack of memory, I believe.
Well, I don't think you can impeach a lack of memory, but you can attempt to refresh the memory mm-hmm. of the witness. And isn't that the way that we get past recorded recollection into evidence?
Well, but here, Your Honor, she says it doesn't refresh her recollection.
Okay,
right?
But I think in terms of the question, what was it impeaching? I don't know that it impeaches.
Well, okay, so let's say that was wrong. It's not impeachment, or the statement by the prosecutor that it was impeachment was wrong. Nonetheless, this is not an evidentiary issue. He's got to get the evidence into the record, and he didn't. He didn't because there's a way to do 8035, and he didn't do that.
Is evidence in the record, for example, if a lawyer asks a witness, isn't it true that the light is red, was red? And the witness says yes. Is that evidence that the light was red?
Yes. Again, the difference here is she doesn't say that's what I said. She says this paper you've put in front of me that I don't remember, You have, prosecutor, have just accurately read it out loud.
Right, that's what she's saying.
Yes.
You read it out loud. Lawyer could have given it to her to read it loud, assuming foundation is laid and you're not challenging foundation.
But again, he didn't.
I know that, I know, but still the question isn't, I'm not under the delusion that the question was, do you remember that? No, I understand that that's not what was asked.
Sure.
The question was, is what I just read, what's on that paper?
That was the question.
Right.
Yes. And she said, yes, you accurately read this
you
piece of paper.
You accurately read it.
You are so, literate. Yes.
So, well, no, well, not you're literate. You accurately read what's there.
Yes.
And so it's just, if the alternative could have been that he could have handed it to her to read, or he could have said, does it say this? And she says, yes. I mean, I guess you will say there's a vast difference. Also, I'm wondering, is there a functional difference? If it's real evidence when someone answers yes to another question by a lawyer.
It is, Your Honor, because we believe in the rule of law. They can go back and they can retry Mr. Johnson and they can properly admit the evidence and perhaps the jury would find him guilty and conviction would be entered and he would be sentenced. That's not what happened.
Is it harmless error if it's functionally the same?
No, you don't apply harmless error to sufficiency of the evidence. It's either sufficient or it isn't. And to be clear, to affirm in this case, this court would have to hold that a prosecutor's questions can be characterized as reading evidence into the record under 8035. You can hold that. I don't believe it's ever been held before. If you so hold, I would ask you to publish the case because that would be new. But certainly you can hold that. Respondent has cited no authority to support that proposition and I'm not aware of any. I would like to talk a little bit about the misconduct because even if you were to hold that a prosecutor's questions can constitute reading evidence into the record under 8035, therefore there was sufficient evidence, this was still misconduct, and I'd like to explain why. At a minimum, the prosecutor's statement to the jury, when the judge told you, and actually it's an interesting instruction because what the judge told the jury was nothing the attorneys say is evidence. That's at pages 53 to 54. Again, it's 275 to 76. Nothing the attorneys say is evidence, which is accurate. The prosecutor gets up and tells the jury twice, there's an exception to that rule for my statement that I made. Now that's incorrect. That mattered to this jury. Jurors are smart. Even if the jury heard the evidence, and we're going to say they properly heard the evidence, it counts as evidence. The jury also heard the prosecutor say, on the record in front of them, I'd like to impeach this witness. So the jury heard that word, impeach. The jury is instructed prior statements of a witness are only used to test credibility. They're instructed that impeachment evidence is only used to test credibility. Jurors are smart, and the jury could have concluded, well, wait a second. Yeah, we heard that, but it came from the prosecutor. The judge told us nothing the prosecutor says is evidence. The jury could have concluded that Mr. Johnson was not guilty, but the prosecutor's erroneous statement of law and plainly erroneous statement of law convinced the jury otherwise. He told them it was, quote, an exception to the rule. He's an officer of the court. The jury no doubt believed him. And it was that hook that allowed the jury to find Mr. Johnson guilty when they might not have otherwise. Therefore, even if this court disagrees with us on issue one, I would ask that you remand for a new trial on issue two. This was not a fair trial. It was messy. There was a lot going on here. And again, even if we can post hoc say, well, this was sort of fine because even though the prosecutor did it wrong, the outcome may have been the same otherwise, that doesn't make it fair. Defense counsel didn't know that this was going to count as evidence. In fact, defense counsel made a motion for judgment of acquittal at the end of the state's case. And what he said was, there's no evidence in the record here of statements. He made this exact argument. Now he lost. He lost that motion. But then we go to closing and the prosecutor, now aware of what the defense is thinking, tells the jury nine times, that thing I said was evidence. Even though the judge instructed you otherwise, my words, my statements count as evidence under this exception.
I'd like to go back to the question about whether or not her answers to the questions that incorporated the content of the transcript of the statement she previously made matter.
Sure.
I think you indicated that she answered repeatedly, I don't remember.
Yes, absolutely.
But doesn't the transcript indicate that when asked, for example, quote, he said that I should bash you in the head, I should choke you out. Is that correct? Is that what that says? And she answers, that's what it says.
That's what it says. Yes, she doesn't say that's what I said or I remember saying it. She's affirming that the piece of paper that's been placed in front of her has been accurately read after she's said consistently and throughout, I don't remember making that statement. Let me give you an example. If you asked me, Jenna, what did you wear last Saturday? And I say, I don't remember. I don't remember what I wore. And then you follow up that question and you say, did you wear a blue shirt? And I say, you know, I wear blue kind of a lot. That must be what I wore. That's not me remembering that I wore a blue shirt.
And what if I show you a photograph that I took of you on that day in question and say, is this is this a photograph of what you were wearing that day? And is it a blue shirt? And you said, yes, that's a photograph that was taken and I was wearing a blue shirt.
I would say photographic evidence is significant. I would recognize myself. She never says I made that statement. I remember making that statement. All she says is, you've told me this is my statement. I'm not going to say the cops are lying when they type it up. She says something to that effect. That's what it says. I think it's different, Your Honor. Thank you.
Give you rebuttal. Respondent.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Charles Rasmussen, and I am the Todd County Attorney. My assistant who tried this case at the time was Michael Schneider. Since then, Mr. Schneider has been hired away from me to another county. So you have me here today, and I'm going to do the best I can. I want to start off just briefly pointing out in the appellant's brief, states that this is a highly unusual case. It isn't. Cases like this are not so highly unusual for us. We try these things on a regular basis and in the trenches and domestic violence cases especially are the most difficult that make them especially difficult. If we have a witness that's reluctant, that doesn't want to remember, may change their mind on the stand.
But isn't it unusual that the actual statement wasn't offered into evidence?
And I looked through the transcript, but I didn't see that. If you recall, there was a statement by Mr. Schneider that said that would be highly prejudiced. A lot of times we run into a situation, whether it's on the record or not, that it's hinted or it's said that the judge won't let that in like that.
Well, but we don't have that in the
record
here.
That's right, and we're speculating. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's correct.
But that would tend to make it unusual, wouldn't it? That we're not here hearing about whether or not the statement should have been admitted into evidence. We're here, and you're making the argument that the attorney's recitation of the statement during questioning constitutes that evidence.
Yeah.
Right?
That's correct. But for those of us who deal with these types of individuals, we run into difficulties. And you can see reading through this transcript that Mr. Schneider had a lot of difficulties with the witness, and he's trying to maneuver his way through these difficulties to get to the evidence. He wanted to do the best he can to extract the evidence in the best manner and accurate manner that he could.
But the prosecutor several times mentions that he's going to impeach the witness. Was this questioning used for impeachment purposes?
Your Honor, when we go through the transcript, document ID 98, and I'm starting out at 102. Page 102, and he says that, Your Honor, pursuant to Minnesota Rule of Evidence 8035, I want to treat this as a past recorded recollection, and I would request the opportunity to impeach the witness on that part of the statement. There's some confusion there. Then if we go to page 105, Your Honor, what the state wants to do is treat this as a past recorded recollection. This rule of evidence 8035 provides that a memorandum of record, and he goes on to what that is. So we request permission essentially to treat the victim as a hostile witness, to impeach her, and I would do that by reading and cross-examination her isn't it true type questions. Now, and then he has a conversation with the court, and the court says, all right, I'm looking at 803, and it goes on down to page 106, and the court says, I don't believe this is exception requires for your witness to be a hostile witness, Mr. Schneider. And Mr. Schneider says, I don't think it does, Your Honor. I guess that was just part of the language I was using as to basically impeach the witness if she doesn't want to say those words specifically or just simply cannot at this point. I would just use the wording and as a rule of evidence 8035 that allows for this type of thing to occur. So there is some confusion on there and how to present that, and they go into Stone, and the court viewed Stone, and they discuss that, and eventually the court allowed that evidence in. So yes, there's some talk about some impeachment, but if you read through the transcript, it's 803.5 all along is what they're talking about. And it's how it was implemented, I think, is correct. That's the issue here.
Well, on page 113 of the transcript, Mr. Schneider says, again, we don't seek to submit this as a formal exhibit, but more just to use it for basically for impeachment type purposes, if she can't recall.
Yeah, and I...
Subsequent to the discussion that you were referring to.
Right, so he's intertwining the word impeachment in with 803.5, and that's what makes it confusing. Of course, with 803.5, we can't submit the transcript, and it wasn't submitted.
On page 116 of the transcript, the judge does say, I would intend to allow Mr. Schneider to read it into the record part of exhibit, and then he asks him the number again, so...
Yeah.
And instead of that, he had the Q&A.
And he did.
And how does that meet the requirements of Rule 803?
Well, I think Mr. Schneider was trying to do the best he can to be more accurate. I think what he was doing is he wanted to use his witness to do that. He wanted to interact with his witness to make it maybe in his own mind more credible, even if he's interacting with his own witness. I guess we could say, while it may have been better, cleaner, more formally correct to have the pertinent parts of the document written to the record rather than having that witness confirm the statements by her answers in her testimony. What the state is arguing here today is that the difference is inconsequential. It seems to be a form over substance issue. But if we look at the comment of the rules provide for a great deal of flexibility and discretion. The rules urge that such discretion and flexibility be exercised to accomplish the stated purpose. That's also part of Stone. Towards the end of the Stone opinion, that they also reflect on that. And so we have to have some flexibility. If we look at that, and we're always into the plain language of the rules, if we look at the recorded recollection, it doesn't say anything on who should do it or how we should do it. Even in an appellant's brief, I think there's references to Mr. Schneider didn't stand up and read those two lines out loud. He didn't. He chose to elicit the evidence using the key witness who could not remember parts of her statement, and he read into the record using his witness the relevant parts he needed to prove his case. So we feel that 803.5 was the rule of evidence of 803.5 was followed.
Counsel, the last statement in Rule 803.5 says, if admitted, the memorandum or record may be read into evidence, but may not itself be received as an exhibit unless offered by an adverse party. Who, in this case, would that adverse party be under the rule, within the meaning of the rule?
I would think the adverse party would be the defense. That would be my understanding, Your Honor. The document or record pertains to a matter about which the witness once had personal knowledge. We established that. And the witness presently has insufficient recollection. That was established. The document was made or adopted by the witness when the matter was fresh in the witness's memory. It was done right away. Officer Brittany Hendricks testified that it was taken when she was outside of her home. And the witness did vouch for the accuracy of the document, as did the officer vouch for the accuracy of the statement as well. Stone actually refers to recorded statements that actually play the recorded document or the recording of that. And so Stone, that's what Stone actually stood for. It was different because that was just the recording. So there was no adopted standard of the multi-party situation would require more, I believe. If it was just a state, we'd have to have the officer accuracy and the witness accuracy as in a general rule on multi-party statements. And I believe that was done both through the witness and the victim witness and the officer.
And appellant's not challenging that. Is appellant challenging the foundation for?
I don't believe so.
Under 8035.
Don't believe so, Your Honor. The state argues that that Mr. Schneider did satisfy the requirements of Rule 8035, and he was free then to argue what his witness said as substantive evidence. The judge allowed it in. Mr. Schneider felt that he was free to argue that. And I think the assertion that this was prosecutorial misconduct is actually misplaced. We believe that the record is supported by sufficient evidence for conviction. We had the words of the victim. We had the relationship evidence. We had the supporting testimony of the officer and expert witness. And we have even Mr. Johnson, when he was questioned, could have made the threatening statements at issue, but could not recall to do this alcohol use. So he even said, yeah, I could have made those statements. And the state argues that there was sufficient evidence for the jury to come back with a conviction. Therefore, the state would respectfully request that the trial court be affirmed.
What about appellant's argument that it was prosecutorial misconduct, even if the evidence was admitted under 8035, to refer to that, given the judge's instruction?
And so then would he be free to argue that that's substantive evidence and that's what she said in her statement, or that's the statement was read into the record? How it was a different way of doing it, a different method of doing it, but the state argues that it was read into the record, he'd be free to argue that.
But it was contrary to the judge's direction, correct?
And when the judge's jury instruction that the lawyer's words are not evidence. And I think Mr. Schneider said, well, there's an exception that wasn't addressed in the jury instructions. But if you think about it, the rule of evidence is an exception to hearsay. It's an exception itself.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're just waiting for the countdown.
No problem.
You get 5 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is an error correcting court. We come to you to correct our errors. Now, this may not be a feel-good error, may not be a dramatic error, it may be a technical error. It is an error nonetheless, just as a trial that's missing the jurisdiction element, where everybody knows the crime happened in Hennepin County. There is nonetheless insufficient evidence, and this court reversed such a conviction. So too here, there isn't evidence in the record. It is not enough for the state to say we could have put it in the record, or we tried to put it in the record, or you can take some of the words we said out and say our other words mean we put it in the record. It's the state's burden to prove every element beyond a reasonable doubt, and they did not.
Well, what about the language in Rule 8035 that says that the statement as an exhibit shall not be admitted into evidence unless offered by the adverse party? Or I don't mean to misquote it.
No, no problem, Your Honor. I think the idea behind the rule is that it is presented audibly, that it does not become a document. So I think the rule anticipates oral presentation by an advocate or the judge. What Stone says, and I will certainly accept Stone as applicable precedent, is that playing a recording counts, but that's reading into the record.
So if the prosecutor hadn't used the word impeachment, but had simply asked to have this evidence admitted under Rule 8035, and then went through the Q&A that the prosecutor went through, would that be sufficient to read it into the record?
No, I don't think so, Your Honor. Again, I think read into the record means read into the record. It's a.
But how is that not reading it into the record if he's reading what's on the piece of paper and the witness is acknowledging that that's what's on the piece of paper?
Again, I'm going by the plain language of the rule, which anticipates I start at A, I read to Z, and I read it to you. I read it to the jury. I don't ask somebody else to confirm that it's true. That's a different presentation of evidence. Again, we have rules for a reason. And
so the court, so at the end, after all that discussion on page 123 of the transcript, prosecutor says, I guess at this time I would move pursuant to Minnesota Rule of Evidence 8035 to read that portion as a past recorded recollection into the record.
Yes.
Objection. Overruled. Some foundational questions, and then he reads lines, and she confirms that that's what they say. You're saying that that part of having the witness confirm that, in fact, what he read is accurate is what is the game changer here.
Yes, this entire case.
So had he just read it, good, but having confirmation from the witness that that's in fact what it says is what takes away that fact that he read it.
Yes, this case depends on how you characterize those two lines of questioning, no question. And we would submit that that is not reading into the record. Stone is very clear. The prosecutor had a piece of authority that told him exactly how to do this, play the recording. He didn't. He, in fact, said, I don't want to play the recording. Now, again, he was
It's just a few lines of it. Was that part of the issue? I mean, perhaps not all the lines. It's just six lines of the transcript.
Well, prosecutors excerpt statements all the time and just play part of them.
Use a transcript in your view, or did it have to be a recording?
To use a transcript? It was just a court exhibit. Yeah, I think that's fine. I think that's what the rule says.
So it doesn't need to be an audio recording.
No, no, no. But Stone talks about the manner of presentation, right? Stone doesn't say, under 8035, a prosecutor can cross-examine, impeach a witness, ask questions, and ask them if part of a statement was true. That's not what Stone says. So if you compare Stone and Stofflet, the case cited by appellant, there's a permissible path and an impermissible path. What is permissible under Stone is playing the statement. I don't contest that the prosecutor could have done that here, but he didn't. In fact, he was very clear that he didn't. He made a mistake, but that's why we're here. Stofflet.
In Stone, though, that involved playing the recording, correct?
Yes.
So I guess what I'm wondering is, did the Stone court really contemplate whether this type of question and answer framework constitutes reading it into the record for purposes of Rule 8035? I mean, you're arguing that Stone gives you the playbook. But does Stone give you the complete playbook or just address what was at issue in Stone?
To be sure, Your Honor, Stone does not address this particular question. It doesn't say you can't do this. It doesn't say you can do this. However, the Stone is the prosecutor's authority at trial. He had read Stone. Stone told him to play the recording, and he didn't do that. But again, he said, as Your Honors noted during my opponent's argument, four times, I request the opportunity to impeach the witness. I would like to treat her as a hostile witness and impeach her. I'd like to basically impeach the witness. So again, we don't know why he said that, but he said that. And then he did something that looked an awful lot like impeachment, and he can't use that evidence as substantive evidence. We would ask that Your Honors reverse Mr. Philip Johnson's conviction or in the alternative remand for a new trial. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The matter has been well argued, and it is taken under advisement.